Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am so excited that you guys are here to join us, and very excited to welcome Dr. Carmen Battaglia. He's a board member for the American Kennel Club, and he is going to talk to us today about how to breed a super dog, and I am so excited. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate being here, and thank you all for coming. I always like to start when I do lectures, to start with a phrase that I use at the university all the time, and that is, those who don't read have no advantage over those who can't. I put that on the blackboard the first day of class, knowing that the first 3 days are called drop an ad. So if you don't like the class, it's too early in the morning, it's cold, you can't find parking, you can drop that class and add another.
There you go.
But there's another reason for that, and it has to do with why I like that phrase. And it reminds me back when I was in graduate school. I had a professor named Winston Kellogg. He was a Nobel Prize kind of guy.
Oh, my gosh.
And he had no time to argue with students over grades. So he would make things simple. So the first day of class, remember, this is drop an ad. Dr. Kellogg would say, all right, I'm going to tell you how I'm going to grade. We're never going to talk about this again. I'm going to give you 4 tests. 100 questions each. They're all multiple choice. If you get them all right, you get an A. If you miss one, you get a B. If you miss two, you get a C. You miss more than that, you flunk the test. And then he said, because the room by now is dead quiet,
yeah, right?
Is there anyone in here today that doesn't understand how I'm going to grade? So we're all thinking, oh my God, how are we going to possibly survive this? So little did I know that 20, 30 years later, I would be a professor.
Yes.
And students would be asking me that same question, Dr. Battaglia, how are you going to grade? And I thought, well, you know, I don't think I want to grade Kellogg's way. So here's what I say. I'm going to give you 4 tests, 100 questions each. They're all multiple choice. 50% of your test questions are going to come from your homework. So if you're not interested in doing homework, this would be a good class to drop. So now think about it. Why do I take the time to say that here? The answer is the same as why I say it at the university. In the little bit of time I have with the students at the university, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, an hour, 2 hours, I can't teach them everything they need to know about the subject. And that's the problem I have here. In the little bit of time we have,
right,
we don't have enough time to teach the subject. So I have to depend on the fact that you're willing to read, because most of what I'm going to say is on the website. You can access it through breedingbetterdogs.com. You can see the articles we're going to put up on the AKC website. So there's plenty of material to learn what I don't have the time to do in this little bit of time. So let's get right to it, okay?
Awesome.
Breed the super dogs.
So anyone can have one, right?
Anyone who wants to take the time and willingness to learn can have a super dog. This is not out of reach with the technology. We live in the greatest time ever in the history of the world. There's more technology today than there's been in the last 3,000 years.
Here it is, all in front of you.
and it's a matter of taking the time to learn. So if you ask yourself, well, let's talk about what is a super dog? You know,
right.
If I saw
right.
one, what would it look like? Well, a super dog would be 50% smarter than the other dogs. That means
okay.
they're more trainable.
Right.
So who would want a smarter, more trainable dog? Well, if I was out in the show ring today, I'd want a more trainable dog. He'd perform better.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a obedience dog, an agility dog, a hunting dog,
yes.
or even one of our military or TSA dogs,
right.
I would want one of those. So in addition to being smarter, the super dog has a better heartbeat. It has a better heart rate. Its adrenaline runs faster.
And I think that is fascinating. The physiological piece. It's not just the mental, the physiological piece.
Exactly. And they have greater tolerance of stress and more resistance to disease for the rest of their life.
Wow.
So who wouldn't want a dog like that?
Right.
So the question is, how do you get that? How could you produce that kind of a dog? Well, in the super dog program, you have to put the mates together, right sire and right dam. Kind of ask yourself these questions as I go along. In the usual three-generation pedigree that most people look at, there's 14 ancestors.
Right.
So when you breed this dog that has 14 ancestors to another dog that has 14, you have 28 ancestors.
That's a lot of numbers.
So the question is, what do you know about the 28 ancestors?
Yes.
That's important to know. So I would ask the question, do you understand the strengths and weaknesses of the two pedigrees that you put together?
Mm-hmm.
So let's break that down into what we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So the pedigree that we have today with names and titles
right.
has nothing heritable on it, if
that's
you think about it. The name
right.
of the dog is not heritable. Those titles are not heritable. Those certifications are not heritable. So what good is the pedigree that has no heritable information? So you can't breed a super dog without heritable information.
Can't breed to those titles.
So let's use a different kind of pedigree. Let's take two pedigrees, one that deals with the conformation of the dog and another pedigree that deals with the health.
Nice.
Okay, and the special traits that we might be interested in. So let's take a look at that. So one pedigree is called the stick dog pedigree. So it breaks, the dog appears now, instead of a name, you have a name under a stick dog.
Right.
Stick dog has seven structural parts. The ears, the head, the neck, the back, the tail, the rear.
Right.
So now we got seven structural
right.
parts. If we color code the parts based on the breed standard.
Yes.
So we have to know the breed standard. If we do that, we can visually look at the pedigree of 14 ancestors, and we can see the strengths and weaknesses of the conformation. So we might see that a lot of the ancestors have good top lines, but poor fronts.
And here's an important thing to me, Carmen. Where are they getting this information? When we put that stick dog pedigree together, are we doing that based on we've seen all these dogs? We've spoken to the breeders? I think that's important to acquire that information.
That's right, and that takes time. So
yes.
this you're not going to do this overnight. You're going to do this over time.
Yes.
In the real world, what happens is, usually in the third generation, most people have never seen those animals. Most of them are dead. I mean, it's just the way most of our pedigrees are. So there's going to be missing information in the pedigree. That would be, say, the mother of the litter.
Yeah.
So we don't know as much about the mother litter as we'd want. So we try to do the same thing about the father of the litter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look to see whether this combination is the best in terms of producing the conformation of the dog we want.
Right.
But that's only half the dog.
Right.
The other half the dog is how about health?
Right.
So in every breed, there's what's called the dreaded diseases.
Right.
The dreaded diseases are those that kill, mm-hmm. cripple, cause early death, or blindness.
Okay.
You must breed those out first. All the other stuff is secondary to these diseases. So you have to know in your breed,
right.
what are the dreaded diseases? Well,
right.
most people know that. Sometimes it's hip dysplasia, could be epilepsy, mm-hmm. could be any one of these okay. things. So this pedigree that we're going to deal with that has to do with health or a special trait, if we were, say, breeders of police dogs, we would want high drive.
Yes.
That would be a trait we'd be
yes.
looking for. We'd be looking for a lot of health issues. We want good hips, good elbows. So we can
right.
code that in this other pedigree.
In this other pedigree we're
this
making.
This other pedigree okay. is called a symbols pedigree.
Okay.
So instead of using a stick dog, in this pedigree, we allow circles to be females,
okay.
squares to be males.
Okay.
So now I visually can see the gender mm-hmm. of all the dogs in the pedigree. But the symbols pedigree allows you to include the litter mates.
Vertical pedigree like you can get at OFA.
Correct.
Love that.
So now we can look at the female and see, well, she had two sisters and a brother. And we can see that the male might have had, you know, three brothers and maybe no sisters.
Right.
So the whole pedigree
now. And we can
now,
find out that this one had lots of good or lots of bad of whatever our deadly
right.
disease is.
So now with colors, we can code the symbols pedigree mm-hmm. for hips, elbows,
right.
whatever we want.
Thyroid
we
and
just,
cardiac.
We allow the color to tell us what we're looking at.
Right.
So we can code them for those that are carriers,
nice.
Those that are affected, those that are normal.
Okay.
So again, how much do most breeders know about that in their
right.
pedigrees?
Right.
Well, some know more than others, but what everybody realizes when you think of the pedigrees this way is that we need a lot more information.
Right.
So you have to do more homework, okay? So
that 50% of the grade is on your homework.
That's true. So what you end up realizing is that you're going to find that some of the dogs in your pedigree that you like are carriers.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what do you do with carriers? There are different choices, okay? You can throw them all away and throw all the breeding away with them, or you can go to another part of the literature that we now know about called managing the carriers.
Yes.
You simply manage them out of the pedigree through selection. That's one approach. Another is to use formula breeding. Formula breeding is where you have outstanding dogs in the pedigree that carry the traits that you want, and you want to concentrate their genes in your puppies. So there's a whole paper on formula breeding.
And this is on the Breeding Better Dogs website.
It's on the website.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can simply search.
Listeners, we will make sure that these links are available to you.
Good. Then the other problem is that you could have a breeding where you don't know very much about the ancestors on either side.
Right.
The way out of that dilemma is called breeding up. So you're going to breed a litter. You're going to save a puppy out of that litter that's as good or better than its mother.
Yes.
And then you're going to breed that dog and save out of that breeding the same. So in three generations, you're going to eliminate most of what's missing. That's called breeding up.
Okay,
so there's three ways to approach this breeding problem. Okay, so let's now say that we're ready to breed.
Okay.
So one of the things that we want to think about is, do we want to line breed? Do we want to inbreed? Or do we want to outcross?
Right.
So let's talk about the definitions.
Absolutely.
So
line breeding.
Line breeding. We're breeding cousins to cousins.
Right.
Inbreeding, we're breeding closer than cousins to cousins.
Correct.
Outcross means in four generations, we have no common relatives.
Okay.
So why would we want to outcross? You outcross because you're unhappy with what's in your pedigree and you're looking for new traits. So you should expect to see in your puppies a lot of variation between them.
Right.
So you will not get consistent litters when you outcross, because that's the nature of the way the genes behave.
Right. Okay.
So your option is to line or inbreed.
Okay.
Okay, so you can inbreed when you know a lot about the relatives. Well, if you're in one of the situations where you don't, that's not a good alternative, or a smart one, I should say. A better one would be to line breed, because there's all kinds of cousin relationships.
Right.
You know, as
which
my
side
wife,
of the pedigree are you going to line breed on?
Yeah, and as my wife says, you know, you're a cousin second removed. I'm not sure I know what that means, but it seems like the women all understand.
Yeah.
All right, so here we are now. We kind of quickly walked through things we would want to do, just bringing the two parents together.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we've made that decision.
Okay.
So there we are. So now we're building this super dog.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to breed her tomorrow, okay?
Okay.
So the next piece of research says if that's what you're planning to do, take advantage of a supplement called DHA, three letters, DHA. Common vitamin you can buy at any grocery store.
And this is for the dam?
For the dam. We're going to feed her one tablet each day from the day we breed her until the day she finishes weaning her puppies.
Excellent. Okay.
So the purpose of DHA is to enhance the brain of the fetus.
Okay.
Okay. So when this puppy now is weaned, basically the puppy's been on this diet of DHA from conception to weaning. So we know that they're going to be weaned somewhere around 4 or 5 weeks old, depending on the female. So now we can simply supplement the puppy's diet with DHA until they're 14 weeks old.
Okay, so those puppies are on it from the minute the bitch is bred until they themselves are 14 weeks old. Okay.
And the reason for that is because at 14 weeks of age, their brain is 90% developed. We can do no more with it in terms of the supplement.
Right. Right.
So if you test the puppies when they're 14 weeks old, they will test out 50% smarter than all the others who were not on this regimen.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love Pure Dog Talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group, This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, Laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love.
So now when you think about we've genetically, through the pedigrees, right, put two dogs together to produce this outstanding puppy, we've now made this puppy a little bit better by enhancing its brain through the use of DHA, but there's some more research we could use. And this one is called early neurological stimulation.
Yes.
Okay. Good. This came out of that secret research back a while ago. And what the research shows is that if you stimulate the early neurological system when the puppies are 3 days old until they're 16 days old,
right,
it will change them forever. So the paper is on the website, early neurological stimulation.
Links provided.
Right. So what you will do with your puppies when they're 3 days old, you're going to stimulate them once a day. So you're going to take the puppy. Let's assume your pencil is my puppy. Okay.
It's a cute puppy.
So we're going to pick up the puppy. She's been nursing with her mother. We're going to take our Q-tip. I'll get a Q-tip over here. This is my Q-tip. And I'm going to find a toe. And I'm going to try to tickle the toe with a Q-tip. And I'm going to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, 5 seconds of stimulation. It's called tactile stimulation.
In the toes.
Between the toes. Mm-hmm. So now I've got the puppy in my hand. So while I have the puppy in my hand, I'm going to hold the head up like this. Okay.
Right.
Gravity will take blood out of the brain. Okay. So gravity is going to pull blood out of the brain. The neurological system is going to see that as a problem and tell the heart, pump blood back into the brain. Stabilize this puppy. So you're going to hold it like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So neurological system's going to work again. First time we tickle the toe, neurological system says, hey, this is different.
Right.
This doesn't happen to three-day-old puppies. Nothing tickles its toes.
Right.
So now we're giving it a new problem. We got too much blood coming out of the brain. So the neurological system's pumping blood back up.
I do this, but I never knew the why.
Yeah,
now the why is you're building your cardiovascular.
Right. Watch this now. Ah. Now we're going to take the puppy. We're going to point the head down to the ground.
Right.
Now we're going to overload the brain with blood. Neurological system recognizes a new problem.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Starts pumping blood back up. So now we still have the puppy in our hand, but he's pointing his head to the ground. Now we're going to put the puppy on his back, the supine position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the alpha puppies are going to start to let you know they are alpha. Okay.
Yes.
Now, maybe at 3 days old, maybe not. But by the time they're 8, 10, you're going to start to notice that some are more active than the others.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, in the meantime, before we started all this, I took a washcloth, put it in the sink. I got it nice and wet.
Mm-hmm.
Wring it out. It's in the refrigerator. So it's been there about 30 minutes, so it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take that washcloth and I'm going to put it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take the puppy and set him on that washcloth, 4 little pink feet and his belly, and he ain't going to like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then we're going to put him back with his mom. We're going to pick up the next puppy.
And do it all over again.
All right. So we're going to take each puppy. We're going to use that stimulation once a day from 3 days to 16 and change him forever.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know that most of my audience are English-speaking Americans. And English-speaking Americans think, oh, my God, if once a day is fine, it's like the doctor says, I think you should have one aspirin. You're saying, well, God, if one aspirin is good, two have got to be better.
Exactly.
And somebody says, the heck with two, I'm going to take three. Now, the danger of doing that with overstimulation is fatal.
Yes.
If you overstimulate the puppies forever, they will be changed in the wrong direction and there's no fixing the problem.
Right.
They will not breed. They will be aggressive. They will be impossible to manage. And in the paper, I mentioned 3 times to the audience, do not overstimulate your puppy or you will pay an unbelievable price that you can't fix.
Right.
So now if you think about it, we bred the right two together.
Yep.
We've added DHA.
Yes.
We've done early neurological stimulation.
Stimulation.
So now we've got a really outstanding puppy coming along. So now, so some new research that came from the military, the stuff that some of these things we'll be talking about at the Working Dog Conference.
The Working Dog Conference, which is August
28th and 29th in Durham, North Carolina.
Yep.
Sponsored by the AKC.
Going to be very, very cool. I'm trying to go. Yay! If I get there, listeners, I'm telling you, we will have lots of cool stuff to share.
We're bringing all the stakeholders together, those who have the biggest interest in protecting this country, which are police, our Border Patrol, the TSA, the military, bringing all the stakeholders together to talk about how we can produce a national breeding program to produce the super dogs.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., right.
And talk to us, and for listeners, you guys will remember, I interviewed Mark Dunn, Executive Vice President of the American Kennel Club, back in October. I just talked to him again and got an update. We talked about this conference, which is why I'm so excited about it, and we talked about why this is so important.
Yeah, go back to the events after 9/11, okay? And you have Boston, you have Brussels, you have Las Vegas, you have New York City, you have all these terrorists attacked. Well, it's panicked the whole world. It's not just our country. The whole world's been panicked over this. And the European countries have bought up the supply of the good working dogs. And for 40 years, our country has depended on European breeders.
Right.
So during that 40 or 50 years, our government has had four breeding programs, brick and mortar, where you actually go and to the physical place and see the dogs, and they've terminated each one because of a budget cut. Obama did the last one in 2014. Right. So all that good work that's being done has been basically thrown away.
Right.
So the stakeholders are saying to the AKC, we need an outside group who have breeders, and we have 130,000 breeders in AKC.
Go.
We register 1.3 million dogs a year.
Yeah.
So we have the capacity to do the job. Right. We just got to take the technology that we know and share it with everybody who wants to participate.
Right.
And that's what the conference will be about coming up.
It's going to be pretty exciting, you guys. We'll be bringing you as much information from that as we can.
I hope. Yes.
Yeah.
Please do.
Very cool.
Right. So now we got this puppy that's 14 weeks old. And a new piece of research shows that there's something called the maternal influence.
Yes.
Most of us probably know this, but we never think of it in this terms. One of the things that the government has tried to do, this was several breeding programs, is there something that a puppy can learn along the way that'll make a big difference later in life?
Yes.
And so one of the guys says, well, why don't we take a puppy's trained mother? So they started out with a bomb detection dog. So this mother was good at finding bombs. And they put the puppies behind a fence, and they let them watch their mother find the bombs.
Yes.
And what they found out is that a puppy watching its mother find something or do something, when these puppies became adults, they were significantly better than all the other puppies. So then, to make sure they were right, they said, well, let's let the puppy watch another female, but not its mother, do the same thing. They weren't as good. So then they watched the puppy watch a male. They weren't as good. Then they did what a lot of people do. They didn't let the puppy watch anybody, just grew up them up in the kennel, and then went out and trained them.
Right.
The ones who watched their mother were far and above everybody else.
Yes.
So I said to myself, well, supposing I wasn't in the bomb program, I was breeding show
hunting
dogs.
Hunting dogs.
Hunting dogs would be a good example.
We do
example.
It in hunting dogs. It's
let
absolutely.
Let the puppy watch its mother work.
Absolutely.
And have a better puppy. Okay.
Absolutely.
So most of us, you know, I mean, it's kind of common sense. We do this at home. We watch our mothers at home.
Right, exactly.
She tells us how
she
to cook,
us how to
wash
cook.
The dishes.
Yep, absolutely.
I know how to wash dishes.
Right. Do
so,
laundry.
Yeah. So that's another thing that we know that we can do in this program. So now the puppies are being moved along, and we have to now socialize them. We can't just raise them in a kennel.
Yes.
So socialization becomes
and
an important
And so we're still
part.
At that 14 to 16 weeks, or we're starting the socializing piece in
we're
this
starting
program
We're starting 8-9 weeks as
Good.
Soon as we think they're ready to...
Shots, vaccinated,
they've been weaned,
all that.
And they can go out. Okay. So now we start socialization. So we want to get them outside the kennel area, where whatever that is. We want them to see new places.
Yes.
Put them in a car. Let them get used to the rumbles and movement of motion. And then we want to start to listen to new sounds and different smells.
Yes.
Now they're, say, 20 weeks old. Okay. So now we get to the next stage called enrichment.
Okay.
So now we're going to ratchet it up a little bit. So these puppies, by this time, should not be nervous over strange things, strange people.
Right.
They should be comfortable around children. Now we can take them and start walking up and down stairs. Get on an elevator and let them feel that. Mm-hmm. Take them to where we have escalators and let them ride the escalator into areas where there's a lot of traffic and noise.
Right.
So why do we want to do that? If you look at the dogs at a dog show, so many times really good dogs are easily distracted. The handler's hoping just as the judge looks and the dog suddenly hears something over there. And yeah. But you also have that problem with military dogs, right, and police dogs. Distraction is not your friend. So the idea of enrichment is to teach the dog how to focus without being distracted.
Right.
So now creativity, your creativity,
yes,
is how many ways can we
distract the dog and keep the focus.
So, because you'll find that the very best ones are not distracted.
Right.
So now we're on our way to having the dog, by the time he's 9, 10 months old, in our terms, we call that a green dog. Okay.
Okay.
He's well socialized. He can fit into many places. So now,
To be trained.
What is he best suited for? And this is where now we start to separate it out.
Right.
So you'll find that same kind of logic is true for the seeing eye dogs.
Yes.
It's true for the dogs that are being bred and developed to support veterans who are disabled, okay, severely disabled people. And it's where we get the TSA dogs from, the military dogs, and all the rest. So that
encapsulates
40 minutes, 20 minutes.
A two-day seminar in 40 minutes, people. I'm telling you, that's amazing.
It in. So most of the information is written on the subject. These are all papers that are on the website. And we'll put more up there very
soon. Excellent. Questions from the audience? Or from the live stream audience. George, if there's anybody that's popping up on live stream with questions.
I was going to ask you, in addition to the DHA, is there any other supplementation for the dam breeding whelp, other than the DHA?
Well, other than supplementing the dam with DHA, I can tell you some things not to do, as opposed to things to do.
Okay.
Do not feed the dam puppy food. I hear this all the time in my lectures, because they think what they're doing is nourishing the puppies by feeding the dam the puppy food before the puppies are born. And when they ask me that question, I say, if your sister was pregnant and she's in her 8th month, we have only 1 more month to go and you're going to have a nephew, you think you could get away with feeding your sister pablum so that you're feeding your nephew-to-be? What the research shows is that puppy foods are not designed for pregnant dogs. They're designed for puppies. And when you feed that to a pregnant dam, you're actually interfering with the nutrition she needs to support that puppy. So absolutely do not feed dams puppy food. Normally today, that's really good questions. If we've got a few minutes,
let me just talk about
nutrition.
And we have a few more questions, but nutrition is an awesome one.
15, 20 years ago, there was a researcher, a nutritionist at the University of Pennsylvania named Kornfeld. And Kornfeld often wondered, is the price of dog food worth it? Are you paying too much because the quality is not there? So he didn't tell anybody he was going to do this. On his own, he decided he'd take all the major brands and he would test them for their quality. And then he compared the price with the quality. And what he found is that price is related to quality. The more you pay, the more you get. So now the question was, how much does your dog need? Well, if your dog is in the Iditarod, he probably needs a very high-quality food. But if he's hanging around the house, laying around, he doesn't need the highest-quality food out there, okay? He can get by with something less. Depends on what you're willing to spend. So Kornfeld found that information out, and he published it. Well, the dog food manufacturers were delighted to hear that. Oh, my God, we can say our best dog food costs this, and we got the research to back it up. And it was true. He waited 5 years. Thinking that maybe they will reduce the quality of their dog food but keep the price up. He redid the study and found out that they didn't. Okay, so price is related to quality. So now it's a matter of how much quality does your dog need. So what happened? That became known throughout the world. Some companies who are in the business of making money decided they wanted to own this market called dog foods. So three companies, two candy bar companies, Mars and Nestle's, okay, and Procter & Gamble bought up the entire market that makes dog food today. So they own it all with a few others on the side. But in terms of the market, they own 80-90% of the market. So they wanted not only market share, they wanted profits. So their stockholders, okay, their board of directors said, we want you to hire the best nutritionists that are out there and the best scientists, and we want a perfectly formulated dog food. They have accomplished that. So the high-end dog foods today are perfectly formulated. But what they didn't do is they didn't tell all of us. They didn't tell all the breeders that the dog food you used to feed was okay, but the same dog food today is perfectly formulated. They didn't bother to tell anybody that. So what happened? So the breeders kept doing what they've always done. You know, they supplement a little of this, a little of that, because they heard their breeders said, oh my God, we're raising show dogs. We can't feed them this stuff. We got to supplement it with all these things that we know they eat. So what was happening is they were altering the formula of a perfectly formulated dog food. And there are unintended consequences of altering these formulas.
Yes.
So we began to see in the dog world, you go to a dog show and say, you know what? The bitches can't get bred. They don't ovulate anymore. The litters are getting small.
Right.
Pointing fingers everywhere. And the fingers should have been pointed right there with the breeder themselves. But they didn't know. They didn't know. So now we know, but we still have the problem. We haven't told the audience. You know,
we're telling you, audience.
Yeah.
Here we are telling you.
So that's what's going on in the dog food world. So a lot of the things that people are doing that are producing problems within their breeding program and their dogs, they're doing because of the supplementation. It's a little bit like if we eat a diet that has too much of something in it, we begin to notice this, and then we go to the doctor. But a lot of times when we see this in our dogs, we point a finger of blame somewhere.
So are you saying that a nutrition could directly affect the size of the litter?
Absolutely.
Or the ability to get bred?
That's a great question. There's a piece of literature out there now that says you can influence the size of the litter by what you feed her while she's in whelp. And a quick answer to tell you what the paper's all about. The paper says, look, if you're feeding a high-end quality dog food, it is perfectly formulated. If you don't change the formula, and your bitch is under 5 years of age and in good health, that's the most amount of puppies she's able to produce. So now let's just think about who this is good information for.
Right.
If you're in a breed where you have 10 or 12 puppies on the average, you might want to supplement a little bit.
Okay.
But if you're breeding toys and terriers where you're getting one puppy, two puppies, this is great news because you could be getting three puppies just by not altering that formula. That's the real good news with this research about what nutrition can do.
Who wrote the papers?
It's on the website. I don't
Breeding
recall.
Better Dogs website. We'll make sure we get a link to it.
Yeah, I don't recall who did that.
They're not from a dog food company.
Yeah, the DHA was done by Russ Kelly, and you'll see when you go up there, the papers are there. You'll see the authors and all the references to their research is there.
Don't you think, though, in the last 10 or 15 years, though, I mean, I breed German Shorthair Pointers, and I show a lot of breeds, and I help a lot of my clients with their breeds. Generally, across the board, we have seen breeding issues. And I don't know that people are supplementing or not supplementing, but we're seeing bitches that, like in my breed, we usually live bred them one or two times, had a litter 12 or 14, and we're having a harder time getting bitches pregnant. Dogs are not as virile as they used to be. They're not carrying their litters. They're having small litter sizes. And yeah, you talk about pointing fingers and we all go back to nutrition. Do you not think that that has something to do with it?
I don't know. What I do know is that we have a lot of technology and we have a lot of chemistry in our society. Mm-hmm. You know, most of our water is fluoride, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot of chemicals.
A lot of other variables.
A lot of things going on.
A lot of variables.
You know, when President Eisenhower was president, I have a friend whose grandfather was his physician. And he said when he was in medical school, they had only read about coronary patients. They had never seen one, and he didn't see one the entire time he was in medical school. Now, this is pre-World War II, okay? After World War II, heart attacks became commonplace throughout America. But what else became commonplace, okay? Fast foods. So when you start thinking about how our diet has changed, almost all the corn in the country is genetically modified.
Absolutely.
So in Europe, you know, they won't buy our corn anymore because they don't want genetically modified foods.
The meat ate the corn.
So we have gluten-free now, and we know there's a lot of issues now with too much gluten. So when you add all of that together, there's no way for the dog to escape it all. And there's been some interesting genetic studies, DNA studies done on these kind of issues. There's 13 breeds that have an epidemic problem with bladder cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these diseases are called silent killers because there's no forewarning. The time you find out your dog has bladder cancer, your dog is basically dead. So I was with one of the researchers who's doing that research.
The other one that is fascinating, and I am trying, I'm praying I'm going to get an interview with one of the primary researchers, dilated cardiomyopathy and grain-free foods. And this is now they've proven research link that I am trying to get the actual researcher who's done the study. And I think we're all saying the same thing. Absolutely, nutrition affects our dog's health, our dog's reproduction, our dog's everything else. I'm sorry, you had a question back here I wanted to make sure we got to.
I just had a question. I know that there were some puppy foods on the market that say that they had added DHA to the foods. And I was just wondering if that was something, an angle to explore or
yeah.
that type of food. I know there's so many foods on the market that cater to certain
That's a good DHA question. Here's what the research shows. Almost every dog food will put on the label DHA, but that doesn't say how much.
Right.
So here's the study. In the study, they took three colonies, not three dogs, three colonies of females. In the first colony, they just went to the grocery store and bought it right off the shelf. And so that bitch was given that all the way through until the puppies were 14 weeks old. And when they tested those puppies, they got 30% of the problems right. Then they went back and they took another colony of bitches, took the same dog food, and they added a little bit of DHA to that diet all the way through until those puppies were 14 weeks old, and they got 47 or 48% of the problems right. Then they went and got the third colony, and now they got the bottle of DHA off, and you'll see it if you go to my website. You'll see, you know, it's like 500 milligrams of DHA. So that colony got the 500 milligrams. And that's where they got the 50% bump up. So while everybody claims it, they don't tell you how much they have. That's kind of the way around. Yep. That's why a little bit of knowledge is dangerous.
Okay?
But it's a great question. It's a great question because people are misled to believe that it's more than just because it says it's on the label. That's not what the research was. Yeah.
Hap, did you have a question?
I do. We've been talking about nutrition, but I don't think all the issues are nutrition related. For example, in my breed and other breeds, primary lens luxation, the marker was discovered in 2009 at the University of Missouri and the Animal Health Trust in the UK. Do a simple cheek swab to find out if you have a carrier affected or what we call clear or normal, as you call it. And I'm wondering, that's not diet related, is it? That's just a marker that they carry in their system.
That's another link that I don't know that they know yet.
Okay.
I certainly don't. I was in Santiago, Chile a couple of years ago, and the scientist on the panel with me, her specialty was Alzheimer's.
Wow.
But in the veterinary world, they don't use the word Alzheimer's. They call it cognitive dysfunction. And so it took a little while for me to kind of catch up with her. But she had videos. And I thought when I saw the video that my cat had had a stroke because my cat didn't seem to know where she was anymore. She would look out the door like she was confused. She couldn't jump up on the couch anymore. And so I said to my wife, you know, I think the cat's had a stroke. And then I went to this conference, and she and I were on different parts of a panel. So I sat in, and I watched her video, and I said, that's my cat.
Yeah.
That's exactly what my cat looks like. So she talked about Alzheimer's in dogs and cats. And at the University of Toronto, they now specialize in that disease in dogs. And she said this, that cell for cell, gene for gene, protein for protein, at the cellular level of the disease, there's no difference between people and dogs. So all the research now has shifted to dogs for Alzheimer's. So they're going to make a lot of progress pretty soon.
Yes.
So sometimes there seems to be links, and other times there's not. So let me go back to this bladder cancer, because I think you see it's an interesting way to look at a problem. In the past, they've always looked for the genes. They're trying to find a DNA marker.
Right.
And so far, with most of the diseases, which are polygenic, meaning there's many genes involved, there's very few markers that have been found.
Right.
In hip dysplasia, the problem is even more confused by the fact that the genes on the right side of your body are different than the genes on the left side. So if you start thinking about how complicated a hip socket is and how many genes there are on the right side and left side, you've got to have markers for both sides to know about all those little issues.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not likely to find an answer to that quickly. So maybe there's another way. So this researcher doing bladder cancer said, you know, there's 13 breeds that have a lot of bladder cancer. I wonder if there's something we're not looking at. So we went into the database because we know who the dogs are. What are the zip codes and where those dogs live? So you now take that and lay the zip codes on a map of the United States. And what you find is that there's a cluster of them that live over here. Another cluster live over here. All these clusters all over the United States. And you say, well, you know, if dogs are sick, why aren't they uniformly sick? Why are they only sick in certain clusters? So maybe it's not just genetics. Maybe there's something else going on. So that study now is looking at, do these dogs live in neighborhoods where they treat the lawns, okay? You know, the services come in and treat with the chemicals. Are these dogs living in areas where they're on well water versus city water, okay? So they're looking at all these other environmental triggers, because if you look at the epigenetics of a lot of diseases...
epigenetics, right.
You're looking at the epigenetics
right,
of this. Your genes and your cells have memory. They know. They always wanted to make it a biological thing. Either got the gene, it's yes or it's no. Turns out that's not the case. The genes remember what they're supposed to remember. That's why some of these dogs can do things for generations after they've never been trained to do that.
Right.
Plus, aren't they discovering now that that gene DNA can be altered in epigenetics? They just did a recent study, and I'm sure you're aware of it, about radiographs or x-rays affecting the cellular DNA in a puppy, like when you x-ray the dam. I mean, that just opens up a whole new world.
Well, that's one of the areas we intend to study in this detection dog breeding program, by collecting a database of all the dogs that are in the program, which will be the police dogs, the working dogs, the TSA dogs, as many as we can get. And then we'll have their pedigrees or what's known about them. Right. We'll do mouse swabs and collect their DNA. And on the really good ones, we'll collect the semen. We'll have that all in a database. Then we'll turn loose the scientific community, who has a huge interest in this, and let them start studying these dogs throughout their life. So we'll be doing longitudinal studies of the best dogs in the Superdog program and those coming into it.
Nice.
And sharing it with everybody who wants to know.
Just awesome. All right, Dr. Battelli.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
My pleasure entirely.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.